south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, here's an email that should be of interest to everyone who's thinking about or in the process of having a plan B. And even if you're stuck in the U.S. forever after, this email might hit a nerve with you too. Especially if you're living in the southern, warmer states, or in a trailer park, public housing, or the ghetto. This email comes from our good friend Mr. B, our resident expert in teaching English to Chinese kids on the internet for 20 bucks an hour or so. You've heard me talk about him before. He always hangs with us at my Expat Insider seminars and is a welcome addition because not everyone with a plan B comes down with a big nest egg or a pension. Some expats and gringos, especially the very young ones, come down with a bankroll they know won't last them that long. And they know eventually they have to find some way to make some money. And that's where Mr. B comes in. He gives you a power boost and a leg up on how to make 20 bucks or so an hour from anywhere, as long as you've got a computer and a decent internet connection. Mr. B has been living in Guatemala for a couple of years now, and he and his family are doing all right. In fact, more than all right. And just recently, he moved from Guatemala City to another town in Guatemala, called Puerto Barrios, a big port town that's on the Atlantic coast. I'd say it's about a 4 or 5 hour drive from Guatemala City, though depending on traffic, road conditions, and weather, it could take 4 hours, it could take 10. And here's what he says. Johnny, my wife would like your cockroach recipe. We are now living in Puerto Barrios, and there are tons of cockroaches here. We'll write soon about our driving and relocation experience from Guatemala to this town, when I finally get my whole family moved and settled in. Thanks a lot, Mr. B. All right, for you new listeners who might be curious, he's not talking about a recipe where you cook up cockroaches as a main dish or appetizer. And to me, just the idea of eating insects of any kind is a revolting proposition. I mean, look, imagine you're out on a date and the person you're with orders up a bowl of fried grubs. Yeah, that sets the mood for romance, huh? Don't laugh. I have a friend who lived in Thailand for a while, and that's exactly what happened to him. Yeah, I realize insects are loaded with protein and all that. Some cultures go for it. But cucarachas? To me, they're one of the lowest, most horrible life forms. In fact, creatures like cockroaches, mosquitoes, and flies could make you doubt the existence of God, you know. Or perhaps God's a trickster, has a crazy sense of humor, and likes to screw with people. I mean, really, if you're immortal and you live forever, eventually, you're going to get bored, but then you got those humans you can screw with. They're always unpredictable and good for a laugh. I've got a pretty low boredom threshold myself. Anyway, as for me, I just hate cucarachas, flies, and mosquitoes. I mean, really, I can't think of any more useless or despicable life forms except politicians and bureaucrats. Sure, cucarachas are everywhere here in Latin America, all different kinds and sizes. And they've got a few different names, too, not just cucaracha. Some people call them cucas, which is also a pretty gross slang word for vagina. So then how'd that come about? Don't ask. By the way, there are lots of Latino slang words for vagina. For that matter, there are tons of slang words for penis, too. And one particular slang word for vagina kind of throws me. It's melocotón. Melocotón. Which in English is peach. You know, like Georgia peach. How'd that happen? Then there's el coño, another street word for vagina, and then there's la cancha, which, by the way, in English is conch or seashell. Now, I'm laying these slang words for vagina on you right now, so that when you finally get into conversational Spanish on the street, and you hear some of these words, and you will, you'll finally understand what some of these Latinos are talking about, and whether you should feel insulted, grossed out, or maybe even enter the conversation, or exit stage left. Remember, just like in English, in Spanish there are lots of words that have double meanings, and the second meaning can be, in some situations, kind of rude or gross. Which brings us to coconuts. You know, they don't all grow on palm trees. I'll give you one guess what the word cocos mean on the street, besides coconut. Or globo, which in English means balloon. Depending on the context, you'll know exactly what the person's talking about. And of course, our little double meaning exercise here would not be complete without a few words for penis. For example, el pájaro or el pajarito, meaning bird or little bird. In some Latino countries, they use the word anaconda, which needs no explanation. And some use the slang el tuerto, which means one-eyed. Now, in some Latin countries, you have la camote, which means sweet potato, and some on the street say pito, which means whistle. Some of the cruder people might say la gusanito, which means little worm. And there's one that's used in many Latin countries, el chorizo, which means sausage. And, of course, most of those aforementioned words would be considered boys' locker room talk. So if you learn them yourself or you're stuck in a conversation with people who are using them, you wouldn't want to use them in front of your parents or your sister, your grandma, your teacher, or your priest. Did I say priest? Scratch that. So there you have a few of the more popular ones, but the list of street talk words describing private parts goes on and on. And you know, normally the words I've mentioned aren't universal for every Latin country. For example, in Central America, the word huevón means lazy, slow, or stupid, and it means the same in Colombia. And that word huevón is derived from the word huevo, meaning egg in English. So how'd that happen? Who knows? And of course, we've all heard Latino street slang coming from Hollywood movies with Latino themes. For example, pendejo, which means idiot. But south of the border, that is, south of Mexico, they just don't use that word. For example, in Guatemala, they've got some street words that are insults. One's cerote, which means idiot or numbnuts. Or pisado, which means stupid. Or chute, which means nosy. Then there's chuco, which means filthy, dirty, or smelly. Probably none of those words you'll find in a formal Spanish dictionary. And of course, there's street slang that's strictly Mexican, cabrón, meaning a bad person or a person you can't trust. But it's also considered a greeting for lower class people who might be friends. Kind of like the N-word, it could be an insult or a term of endearment, depending on the context and the tone. Then you've got pinche, which means deplorable or despicable, or just a common filler word like damn. You know, like damn car, damn Yankees, damn homework. Then you've got the word mula. No, it's not money. It means idiot, stupid, or stubborn in practically any Spanish country. Mula means mule, as in the animal, which also means drug runner, though in Spanish it's pronounced mula. And of course, the more you interact with average Latinos on the street, you'll soon start picking up on the local slang. And even if you only know 50 words of Spanish, all you got to do is look out for people that are repeating the same word a lot. Like, for example, the words cabrón and vato. Hollywood narco movies are peppered with those words. But as mentioned, if you're south of the border, you won't hear cabrón or vato thrown around much at all. If you do, that person's Mexican. In fact, that's one way Latinos spot another Latino from another country. In Latin America, much of the slang is regional. That's different from the U.S., where street slang eventually blankets the country. Of course, it has to start somewhere, and then it filters through to the rest of the states. It usually takes a couple of months. Unfortunately, many slang words become aggravatingly monotonous, especially in the states, like the A word. Oh, man, that's so A. You know what I'm talking about. I'll never say it. I hate hearing it. Oh, and for you new listeners, that A word I'm talking about does not have hole after it. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about that killer cucaracha recipe. And I mean kill, as in dead. Now, I seriously hate cockroaches. But the thing is, here in Latin America, they seem to live in everyone's kitchen and bathroom. And Latinos are so used to living side by side with them, they just accept them as a fact of life. And don't even put in the effort to whack them. But not me. I'm the cockroach grim reaper. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say this before. I've had months, even years go by in the places I've lived, and I don't see a single cockroach. And I don't use pesticides or toxins. Because, you see, about every 6 months, I make up a little batch of what I call cucaballs, which, by the way, have nothing to do with vaginas. And I'll tell you, the method works like a charm. But you have to follow a few hygienic steps around the house to keep them from coming back. Number one, never leave dirty dishes in the sink, especially overnight, because you'll never get rid of them. Number two, always clean out or at least wipe down your microwave oven after every use. I'm talking about the inside of it now. Because microwave ovens, believe it or not, are happy homes to millions of cucarachas here in Latin America. Don't ask me how or why they seem to survive, but man, they do and they multiply in there. That is if you don't wipe the thing down. Something else you should do is when you open up any kind of package of food, whether it's cereal, rice, beans, sugar, garbanzos, gummy bears, whatever. Always seal the top with a couple of rubber bands and put it in a Ziploc bag. Then throw a rubber band or two around the Ziploc too. So then everything edible that you've opened is sealed twice or double bagged. Man, I can't tell you how many cupboards I've opened in Latino homes to pull out a coffee cup, a plate, or even because I was born nosy. When I do, I almost always see badly sealed or open bags and containers of food. And one thing Latino families are notorious for, leaving food out on the stove overnight. They'll have soup and chicken and meat dishes cooking away on the stove for dinner and leave the leftovers on the stove overnight. Man, that's a midnight snack for 1,000 cucas. So anyway, if you follow those easy steps and make it a habit, only takes 2 minutes a day, and you make up some of my famous cuca balls, which are very cheap and dirty and only have to do that about every 6 months, you just may never see a cucaracha again except at election time. All right, so here's the recipe. You get some borax. You know, in the old days, there was this cleaning powder and detergent called 20 Mule Team Borax. It's pure borax, a white powder. No, the cucarachas don't snort it. When they eat it, it damages their guts and dehydrates them, so they die of starvation. But they just won't outright eat that powder because it's not interesting enough. It's not a food. You have to mix it with something sweet and edible. So you buy some of this borax powder. By the way, welders use it, so you can buy it at welders' supply outfits, too. Though it's sold on the internet, too. You know, the usual suspects, Amazon. For $5 or $10, you can get a pound of the stuff. That'll last a lifetime. So here's the plan. You take a cereal bowl. You put in about a half a shot of borax powder and about a half a shot of regular old flour, like gold medal flour. You throw in a big pinch of brown sugar. Not a lot, just a big pinch. When you do this, use rubber gloves. Not that it's to protect you from any kind of damage, because it won't hurt you. Remember, it's been used for hundreds of years as a laundry detergent. You just put on the gloves because the next step gets pretty messy and it'll stick to your fingers. So you've got your rubber gloves on. Start adding a couple of drops of water. You start kneading it like dough till it becomes the consistency of Play-Doh. So in about 2 minutes, you're going to have something that's about the size of an eyeball. Then you take that eyeball-sized slab of dough, and you break it into about 15 or 20 equal parts. And you roll each of those little pieces into a ball, too. So now you'll have about 15 or 20 little balls, slightly smaller than the size of an eraser head. Now you take those little balls, and you start putting them around the house, mostly in the kitchen and the bathrooms. In the kitchen, you put them inside cabinets, in the corners, and on the edge, where the walls of the cabinets meet the floor. Because you see, cucarachas have a predictable pattern of movement. They have their favorite runways. You see, they follow the corners and edges of walls and cabinets. Now, you space those balls between 3 and 5 feet from each other. You put them in your cabinets, behind the microwave, refrigerator, and big appliances. Also, put them in the corners of your bathroom cabinets and behind the toilet and the sink, too. Those balls are pretty small, but you don't want to make them so obvious that when people walk in, they say, "Hey, the hell's that ball doing in the corner?" With a little planning, you can hide them around the kitchen and the bathroom without anybody really seeing them. Like, for example, you don't have to put them in the corner where the microwave sits, an open area everyone can see. Stick it in the groove where the wall meets the countertop behind your microwave. That's an area that's totally hidden, too, and cucarachas love dark spaces. That's why I recommend you put them in the corners and edges in your cabinet. Now, you have to be patient because it takes about a month to eliminate all the cucarachas using this technique. Oh, and here's a tip. If you have a real problem, an infestation, and you're just getting started with the balls, at night, put one of those balls on the edge of your sink drain in your bathroom and your kitchen. Your shower and bathtub drain, too. Because, you know, they like to hang out in drains, and what are they going to see when they first climb out? And you will notice, after a week or so, the balls get kind of hard. Well, that's okay. Just like Play-Doh does. My suggestion? Just take a little spray bottle with regular water in it. Just shoot a little spritz on your cuca balls, and that kind of refreshes them, or at least makes them more appealing to cucarachas again, because they're always looking for food and water. But eventually they will get hard as a rock. But really, after the first month and you see their numbers have been drastically reduced, you really only have to collect the old ones and toss them and put in new ones every 6 months or so. However, you might want to mix up an extra batch if you have a party or you invite politicians over. And really, you're only going to have a recurrence if you regress to your old bad habits. Oh, and one more thing. When I say don't leave food out on the countertops and stuff, I'm talking about cooked food. You can leave raw fruits and vegetables out on the counter. as long as it's whole and not a cut piece of fruit. Because you see, cucarachas like sugar, sweets, cooked and processed things. Which brings us to a few final thoughts in our never-ending war against cucarachas. Keep an eye on your garbage cans. Make sure they've got covers and they're sealed. My advice, and of course you don't have to follow any of my advice, is to never leave an open garbage can or bag overnight. Always put it outside or at least seal it up at night. Now, the question always is, if you've eliminated cucarachas and suddenly you see one or two after a couple of months, how'd the new ones find their way back in? Could be a lot of ways. Maybe you brought something in from a garage sale or used bookstore or even some package from the grocery store that had one hiding inside. And remember, they come up through drains too. And of course, if you live in an apartment building or high-rise tower and your neighbor has cucarachas, which he probably does because this is Latin America, one or two or more are bound to find their way into your place, whether through crawl spaces or doors without weather stripping, because, you know, in Latin America, 99.9% of people do not have weather stripping around their windows or outside doors. And, of course, there's never weather stripping on inside doors. Why would there be? Oh, and one last tip. If you spill something that's got sugar in it or is edible, wipe it up right away and then hit it with a little splash of Windex. Then wipe that down. Because you see, cucarachas do not like to eat things that are mixed with ammonia, which is a big component in window cleaners. All right, let's slam this virtual chicken bus into reverse and discuss something people are always talking about. I get questions all the time about the four Latino countries that don't have their own currency, their own funny money. They use U.S. funny money instead. That'd be Ecuador, Panama, Belize, and El Salvador. Though Panama and Belize coin their own change, they use U.S. change, that is, coins, too. Now, the story of how these countries transitioned into the U.S. dollar is pretty much the same. They crashed their own currency and economies through management stupidity and corruption by their government officials. Who else? For example, here's an article that explains exactly what happened in Ecuador. You know, Ecuador, exactly 20 years ago, abandoned its national currency, the sucre, in favor of the U.S. buck. So let me paraphrase some of this article, because it's pretty complete. It says, the change to the U.S. dollar resulted from an economic crisis that saw the collapse of dozens of banks, high unemployment, and an inflation rate approaching 100% annually. By the way, right now, Argentina has been running inflation rates of over 50%. For the last couple of years. They're bankrupt and their bonds are in default, so soon enough we're going to see what's going to happen there. But back to Ecuador. The former president at the time when they made the switch over, his name was Jamil Mouad, said in an interview a couple of weeks ago, "We had no choice but to make the transition. We were in the middle of an economic disaster." Yeah, right, of his making, of course. He says it was getting worse and worse and changes had to be made. He says, "I have no regrets about doing it." So, when the currency conversion rate was made on January 9th, 2000, the Ecuadorian sucre traded at 25,000 to the dollar, up from 11,000 to the dollar a year earlier. He says the economy of Ecuador was in a shambles and the dollar was practically the only logical refuge. And, he says, within months of the change, credibility and confidence returned to the economy, and confidence in the currency, U.S. currency that is, remains strong today. Now, in the weeks prior to the switch, the Central Bank of Ecuador devalued the sucre 5 times in efforts to reduce the government deficit. And 4 days before the dollarization started, the government closed the country's surviving banks and froze the value of the sucre. And here's how corrupt these Latin government jerks are. According to economists, later in the game, after analyzing all this, they found widespread fraud preceded the change. Wouldn't you know it, many in the government and banking business knew about it in advance and prepared for it and made big money in the international currency exchange markets, says Juan Ramirez, a professor at San Francisco University in Quito, Ecuador. He says, between the banking collapse and the dollarization, many Ecuadorians lost their life savings. So then how do you change over to the U.S. dollar when 99% of your population doesn't even speak English? Well, it says in this article, following the adoption of the U.S. dollar, the Ecuadorian government launched a Know Your Dollar campaign in newspapers and radio and TV. It was very confusing for people, especially with those who had little education, Ramirez said. In the markets, you saw many small vendors pricing all their goods at $1, even goods that were worth more or even a fraction of that, because they didn't understand the coinage. This is one reason why it took 2 years before inflation dropped to that of U.S. levels. Oh, and get this, which is typical for blundering, chaotic Latin governments. It says, also confusing was the process for exchanging sucres for dollars. It was more than a month after the official announcement before the National Congress passed a law for what they call economic transformation that provided the details of the transition. Then, typical of idiot bureaucracies, over the coming months, the date for full currency conversion was changed three different times. So then after 20 years of dollarization in Ecuador, what's the political and economic fallout? Well, you know what Ecuadorian politicians are saying these days about it? And it's typical because they're all a bunch of slimy, pustulant scumbags. They'll tell you it's put Ecuador in an economic straitjacket. And that's what politicians and lard-ass bureaucrats in Panama, Belize, and El Salvador are saying too. In other words, they're no longer able to turbocharge the printing presses. And their central bank reserves, which are also denominated in dollars, can't be easily drained and siphoned off by the lard-ass slugs in charge, and can't easily be turned into a millionaire retirement package for corrupt politician friends and family. But you know, in reality, when countries dollarize, it's only a temporary fix, because the U.S. dollar itself is funny money with no backing except by the full force and power of the American military machine. And of course, you longtime listeners have heard me say this before, that I just can't get over the fact that the other 16 Latin American countries that do have their own funny money, they always look at the U.S. dollar as if it was solid gold. They all believe it's backed by gold in Fort Knox or somewhere. Even the brightest of Latinos with more degrees than a thermometer, they talk about the inflation problems of their own funny money currencies, not realizing at all that the United States dollar has lost more than 95% of its value since the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, putting that fraudulent scheming concoction into existence. Really, what can you say about a currency that's lost 95% of its value in the past 100 years? Well, if you were to read about that happening in Greece or Portugal or Turkey, you'd say, yeah, that's par for the course. The guys in charge of government there are thieves and corrupt extortionists. Serves them right, I'd never want to live there. You'd be thinking for sure, those in charge are beyond a bunch of losers. But when you plug in the words United States instead of Greece or Portugal, suddenly you get that glazed over look. You've lost your audience, and they're back on their phone looking at Instagram posts again. The truth is, people almost like hearing about other countries whose economies are crashing and burning, but mention that the U.S. is completely bankrupt, $20 trillion in debt, that there's really no fix, and the end of the U.S. dollar is near. People just don't want to hear about it. And when someone brings it up on a panel show, the government talking heads laugh and say, hey, we're talking about the USA. There's nothing to worry about. Meanwhile, in every single Latin American country, people think the dollar is rock solid and backed by gold, even though what really backs it is the military. Think about it. When you're able to bomb every single country out of existence, and they know it, they play by your rules. They have to. But where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about how Latin American dollarized countries came about and the typical pattern of what happens there when they switch over. We're talking about the case of Ecuador, which did the switch over just 20 years ago now. Contrary to what you get from standard blogs and Wikipedia articles about dollarization in Latin America. And remember, we're just talking about 4 out of 20 countries now. The fact is, and most people don't know this, there were actually 2 dollarizations in Ecuador. The first came months ahead of the official one. The oligarchy and politicians and bureau rats with privileged information were told about the coming change and were able to exchange their sucres at 7,000 to the dollar. Then that dried up the supply of dollars right away, such that when the president, Mahud, finally announced the change, the exchange rate went up to 25,000 sucres to the dollar. All the connected politicians and bureaucrats and family and friends got to exchange their sucres for over 4 times what the common man and the guy on the street got to change theirs for. What a bunch of sociopathic, malignant a-holes, huh? Oh, and did you know that the president, Mahud, then fled to the U.S. weeks later, escaping charges of corruption and receiving money from drug cartels? And in return for his services to the Washington bureaucracy, he was granted political asylum in the States. And get this, was paid a consultant fee for various USAID-funded think tanks. Remember, he's the guy who ruined the Ecuadorian economy, pushing inflation from 60 to 100%, which pushed many Ecuadorians into the Venezuelan mode, with hundreds of thousands leaving the country looking for work. So naturally, it should come as no surprise to anybody that the ex-president was given a position as a lecturer at Harvard University, with his entire economic team ultimately fleeing into exile to escape the charges of massive embezzlement, money laundering, and links with Colombian drug cartels. So they all went into exile except one guy, the so-called super minister of economy, Guillermo Lasso. They created a brand new title because he only has a high school diploma, and therefore not legally qualified to be an actual minister, much less know more than a plumber or motorcycle mechanic or McDonald's cashier about finances and the economy. You gotta wonder, how does that happen? A guy with only a high school diploma was head of the economy in Ecuador. Meanwhile, he managed to make a hefty $30 million profit on the meltdown because of his insider information. And those profits immediately got shipped off to those Panama banks. So what'd he do with all that dough? Well, wouldn't you know it, he bought a huge spread in Miami and invested $23 million in a South Florida investment real estate property. Not bad for a high school grad who helped bring his whole country's economic system down. Don't you love it how all these discredited and deposed ex-bureaucrats and politicians end up living in Miami? But you knew that already, right? My question to you is, how close do you live to the promised land? Miami Disneyland, that is. Second question, how's that Plan B coming? Speaking of Plan Bs, remember my website for now and ever after is expatplanb.com. That's where you'll be able to get the late breaking news on my July 2020 Expat Insider Seminar. I haven't really finalized the dates yet, but it will be in the first or second week of July 2020. Oh, and remember my latest, greatest, improved edition of the Latin American Healthcare Report, over 100 pages long, can also be found at expatplanb.com. If you're anywhere along on your Plan B at all, you know that when you eventually make it down to Latin America, whether permanent or part-time, you're probably going to need health insurance. And even if you go naked, meaning no insurance at all, because the prices are so damn cheap down here, anywhere from a fourth to a tenth of what you pay up in the States, still, you'll need the dope on what to expect and how to find first-world doctors, clinics, and hospitals. It's all right there in my Latin American healthcare report. South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Y no Spanish.